You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why my Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hey everybody, welcome to another OG Therapy episode, but not any OG Therapy episode. Today's episode is specifically for Polynesians and anyone Polynesian adjacent, loving Polynesians, or just want to hear some good talk story time with some Polynesians. This is our second episode of Kava Confessions.
Do not confuse this with treatment or mental health advice or direction. Nothing on this podcast is made to supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your mental health caretakers. Although David Koslowski is a licensed marriage and family therapist, he is not functioning as a certified mental health professional in this environment. And same applies to any professional who may appear on the OG Therapy podcast. Welcome to the OG Therapy.
And today I have a very special guest with me, because this guest is someone I've known for a very long time, and I have something in common with her husband. And also I have something in common with her daughter as well, because her daughter right here has a story that when she first told me this, when we went to lunch a little while ago, she did something like a lot of people do that I've done, where I say, you know what? I think we should be vulnerable. I think we should open up and talk about something that most men and most guys don't want to talk about. And it's called, starts with an H, help, asking for help. Okay. So there might be someone at this table that has a struggle asking for help. And I'm looking at you and me. You can see myself in your eye, the reflection of your eyes. And so what I'm so happy about, Taylor, what she did was she offered help in a way that only a daughter can offer. When a daughter asks a dad for help, something about the masculinity goes away. He's like, okay, I guess so. You know, although right. My daughter helped me, my wife's like, no, she's just bothering me, my friends. I'll be cool. But when it's my baby girl, I can't say no. So let me introduce them right now. Actually, I'm going to have them introduce themselves. So first off, to my left is?
I'm Taylor Holdcraft.
Okay.
I'm Lauren Holdcraft.
And I'm Ray Holdcraft.
And Lauren and I are actually related, and we all grew up in the San Diego area, more specific, Carlsbad Oceanside. What's up, yep. All of our Carlsbad Oceanside peeps right there? Yes, sir. And yeah, we got to make sure we got the Junior Seau jersey in there for all the Oceanside people in there. But we grew up together, we're related, and I remember I came back from, I was up in Northern California, the Bay Area, and I showed up, and I remember I hadn't played basketball for like forever, because all my surgeries and knees, I show up, I haven't played basketball. And I walk in, I see this guy on the court that's wearing top to bottom all red Utah football gear. And I'm like, wait, who's that? The reason why I was so shocked is because I played football in the University of Utah. And I didn't recognize him at first glance. But then when I found out who he was, I just got introduced. This is Big Play Ray himself. When I was watching the University of Utah, after I got done, I was always looking for guys who were not scared to get hit and could really hit hard and were really tough and aggressive. But when I saw him on the basketball court, he was still hitting people, and he was still really tough and aggressive. And I was like, yeah, that guy played college football for sure. He wouldn't allow people to call fouls for some reason. He said, that was no foul. That was no foul. I'll show you
no
a foul.
No blame, no foul.
So instantly, Ray and I hit off. We knew all the same people. You know, we'd see each other around town, stuff like that. And then fast forward, I moved back to Utah like many Polynesians do. We find ourselves coming to Utah for some reason. And then sure enough, they moved back to Utah, and then we reconnected. But the way we reconnected was not the way I'd expected. I had no idea. Like most of the guys that we play football with, you only know something's going on in their life after the fact. Mm-hmm. Yep. After the parents posted or after the family posts online. And, you know, and we have lots of mutual friends, and there's lots of guys that went through the University Top program that have had really hard things go through life. And as I know, a fellow, when you're an alumni of a sport or a university, you have a camaraderie with those people. And when your friends don't reach out and ask for help, it makes you mad. Yeah. It pisses you off because you're like, I would help them because they would help me. So that's what I want to start off with is before we get in the actual story, when you guys first came here from Utah, and you settled in roots here, what were the first relationships that really made this your home? Because I got to tell something to our audience, like them, I did not really want to come to Utah. Meaning, even if it was the right move, there's something about the dry air, the lack of ocean, and no good Mexican food. Great Mexican food. Okay?
Yes, that's it.
That us local San Diego's like, man, we're dying over here. We're all getting all white during the wintertime. We have to tell everybody, hey, I'm Polynesian, you know, because nobody can tell because they're so white.
Exactly.
So when you first got here, what were the most important relationships? Because this episode, this is all about relationships right now. So what were the relationships that got you to the roots of Utah that helped you get through what you guys have been going through lately? So let's start with you, Mom.
So relationships, honestly, it was really tough to leave San Diego, to leave Carlsbad, because all of my family was there, siblings and
parents. You couldn't go 5 feet without seeing somebody.
No,
you know?
No, like all of our grandkids, all of my kids were raised with their cousins, their best friends. And so to move to a space where you don't know, where we have a lot of acquaintances, we have a lot of good friends, Ray and I's, but we don't have, our kids don't have friends.
Yeah.
And to move them mid junior high was really a tough adjustment. And so, our super close best friends that we've had since college, they were the ones that kind of wrapped their arms around us and said, hey, like, we're here for you guys. And then in addition to that was our Samoan ward,
yeah,
and that we were a part of. And
weren't the Mahes in that ward with you guys?
They were, and the Mahes were in that ward. Mm-hmm. And it was instant family. It was instant love. It was instant like, hey, you guys, welcome. We love you. And like, let's get you acclimated. And being that we left everybody back home in Carlsbad, and being that we've spent 20 plus years together with the kids and their cousins, it felt like that helped it to feel like home, a little. And as time has evolved and we've made more friends, and just people that have reached out to us, the Utah community, Ray's previous teammates, mission companions of Ray's, and then just college friends of ours who have just like really like taken us in and really just said, hey, like Utah is a good place. You know, we still love California. We still miss San Diego. We love Carlsbad. We get home as much as we can. But those who have become our solid friends, our ward family, and our good, close college friends have really, really helped us to kind of feel and make roots here.
You know, thank you for that. And because Ray spent time here,
yeah,
I'm sure it was probably a little bit easier for him to acclimate because he already had friends here and stuff, yeah, like that. But not like you said, the kids didn't have friends. Yeah. So Ray, when you guys first got here, you start hanging with your buddies, you know, talk some people as much as you can, play golf, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. But how long did it take you to feel like this was your family's new home?
Probably, I don't know, that's kind of tough because I always feel like California's home.
Yeah, me too.
And even though I did come play at Utah a long time ago, I haven't really considered it my home yet, but just with all the friends and family that we do have now and that we've had here before, I mean, it's almost like it is like home now.
Yeah, I mean, there's that old saying, home is where the heart is, yeah, right? And what you guys have been through recently, I think this is where the heart is now.
Yeah. Home is where the kidney is now.
Yeah, home is where the kidney's at now. So that leads me over to Taylor. Taylor, if you don't mind, I wanted you to be the one to crack, you know, to tell the story and tell, you know, my listeners, because a lot of people that listen to my podcast, it's a mixed bag. I mean, parents, different types of people, Obviously, there's a lot more Polynesian people listening to it now. But for those who don't know, why don't you give us a little background about what caused you to just post this post, which I just looked at yesterday. I'm like, dang, that's got a lot of views. I'm like, what? I'm like, man. Yeah. So what exactly, like, how did that all come about? Like, why did you finally tell the story? And then why you finally said, I'm just doing this?
Yeah, so my parents came to me when in August, mm-hmm. right before school started. So I attend BYU. I'm the traitor in the household.
It's okay. We forgive. There's forgiveness. I'm not Catholic, but still love her.
Yeah. The Lord wants me there. That's all there you go. Okay. But right before fall semester started, and they said that we were at the point where dad needed a new kidney. Mm-hmm. If any failure was.
So up until that point, you're hearing dad's health's not good. You're worried. You're scared. But then when you heard that was different.
Yeah. And so just like the worry behind that. And I think between, because I didn't post a video until January. Yep. And so between August to January, our family was, especially I think my dad and our family, was just trying to figure out what that looked like and trying to come to the terms with that. And my mom had approached me about what the social worker said about creating some media to put that story out there. And I was busy in school. I had finals. College at BYU is pretty difficult and prestigious. And so I kind of was like, okay, give me a little bit, you know. Yeah. But I knew that I wanted this video to reach an audience. And I think because of my mission and how my mission was like a media mission, I felt
how it could actually reach more people.
Yeah, I felt the weight of what it could do and where it could go. And so Christmas break, I was back home in California in Carlsbad, and I spent a lot of time at the beach just thinking, how could I tell my dad's story, right? And so
no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
You just gotta get him a kidney.
seconds. Yeah, and it was funny, how when I sat at the beach, all these memories popped up of what my life was
real quick,
there.
What beach?
Warm waters.
I love warmies. They took the jetty out though. That's a whole other story. You can't get this, not the same barrel, but it's okay. Continue.
True that. And so I just spent a lot of time at the beach, in between shifts at Handles, and just wanted to just think about how I was going to tell a dad's story. And so I wrote a script, and I would call mom and dad and read it to them and ask them if they wanted me to add or take away anything. And then I made the video, pulled together all the memories. And something about my family is they're like, you're always taking videos. They're like, why are you always filming everything? And I feel like, even though that can be annoying, if I hadn't done that, most of my life, we wouldn't have had the turnout of the video that I had.
Because you really told the story over time.
And so for me, my dad is, to me, he's the strongest man in the world. And I think I was young when my dad played football at the U, but ever since we've moved to Utah and just growing up, I've always heard stories of how strong he was and how
always respected.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for me, I think I could start from there and just kind of tell the story of who he was and what it was like for us. Because since we've moved to Utah, my dad's health hasn't been the best. It's been a completely different shift into how we were raised. And so for me,
our lifestyle.
Yeah, our lifestyle.
He was playing open gym basketball all the time, golfing, in and out, running around.
Yeah. From going to taking walks on the beach every Sunday together to the mountains was not, it's a big difference.
And also, too, just real quick, you guys, as a psychologist, Google real quick altitude, how it creates depression, specifically for people that ancestors come from the ocean. Well, it's not just for them, but they found a big link. So lots of studies that the higher the altitude, it creates instability in depression. Yeah. And basically what happens is it causes you to be more depressed, more anxious. That's why one of the reasons why the suicide rates are so high in the high mountain areas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Understandable. Yeah. And so I just wanted to tell that story and to show who my dad is, and that he has so much more life. And I think not only our family deserve to see him have that quality of life again, but he deserved that. And so for me, it was the whole process of making that video was very spiritual driven. And so I honestly just felt like I had to rely on the Lord on how to tell the story that he needed me to tell in order to like, and honestly, when I sent that, posting that video on Instagram, I was filled with so much anxiety.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, I already get like anxiety posting on Instagram. I don't know why, but I just wanted like the message. And I like had to throw my phone. I remember that exact moment.
Yeah. You press send and just threw your phone.
Yeah, I pressed send and I threw the phone and I was like, I don't want to look at it. But like my phone just started going off. And so,
well, imagine if it didn't go off.
Yeah.
That was the real fear. Like I put all this for my dad and it's like crickets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, yeah.
So do you think by any chance, a little background, well, not background, we're going to get to a little bit. How much, so we're going to tell a story, but how much of certain things that you chose to do in your life that were very, that put you outside of your comfort zone? What I'm really thinking about is you chose to serve an LDS Mormon mission.
Yeah.
Right? Because I work with youth, especially, you know, teenagers. And I find a lot of them are, their family's going through hard times. Yeah. They want to help their family, but they think, what could I do? Like, I don't make money. Yeah. I don't have any influence. I'm just a kid. And you showed that you can do a lot, but in order to do a lot, you have to believe that it'll have an impact.
Yeah.
So I imagine that going on a mission and the things you did leading up to this gave you enough courage and bravery to break through that fear. Because I heard this a long time ago. Someone said, the number one ingredient to develop courage and bravery is first you have to be scared to death of something. You can't summon courage and bravery unless there's really something scary in front of you.
That's true. Yeah.
So you can't just be born with the silver spoon and be like, oh, you know, you can't develop anything.
Right.
You have to develop it through, I'm scared, and you do it anyways. So what were the things leading up in your life, specifically the mission, that prepared you for that?
I think for me, my parents have always said, like, what do you have to lose? Like, what's the worst thing that could happen? That is something they've always said to me. And it's always been, oh, well, the person says no or nothing happens. And so for me, I feel like I've always had that mindset of, like, what's the worst that could happen? Why not try it? And so for me, on my mission, I think something that really at least helped me is that I think I learned on, I knew in life, right, growing up, especially in California, not a lot of people are members. And so you're just like under a magnifying glass 24/7.
People are like, oh, are you supposed to drink that Diet Coke?
Yeah.
Hey, right. Quit looking at me, man.
Yeah. And I think it was like funny. Like people are like, oh, you're, you know, they would always say, oh, you're Mormon. But then I was a varsity athlete. And then I was like one of the only Polynesian kids at school. And so I fit into them. I was all these different things, but to me, it just would made me like unique and want to try more. But I think
you were already out of your comfort zone. Yeah. Might as well keep going, right?
Yeah. And I honestly have never felt like this is me, but I've never felt like I've honestly, there was something too out of my comfort zone that I couldn't accomplish. I think I've always been down to try anything new. I think
it's a gift she has. Honestly.
I was just going to ask mom, what do you think about what she's saying? Because she's telling me, it's like, I got this scared. I'm a little nervous, anxious, but then she's playing big sports. She's going on missions, doing things that scared people don't do.
Yeah. No, she's always been like that. Like, and I actually think she gets it from her dad. She doesn't get it from me. I'm more like hesitant. I'm like, I'm worried if people are looking.
But he might just not be smart enough to know he shouldn't do things though, right?
Like, yeah. But like Taylor's always been like, it's never like, oh, I'm scared. It's like, what's the worst that can happen? I'm going to go ask this, what's the worst that can happen? And because of that, like her level and circle of networking and contacts is crazy.
Pretty
like,
diverse, I bet, huh?
It is very diverse. And I think it's because she doesn't see like, you know, like she's one person, like she could go and ask them, hey, what do you think about this? Or, hey, you know, I want to ask you this question. And there's no fear in her. I mean, I shouldn't say that. There probably is fear, but it's not like if they say no, she's like, doesn't oh, I feel her. Crushed. It's like, okay, well, they said no. Okay, moving on. And honestly, like it's such a great trait to have because you can, we've seen where it's taken her, like where opportunities, so many things she's had trials, but she's had so many opportunities with things in life. And like even where she's going this summer, because she opens her mouth and she's not afraid.
Well, that's so cool about this next, and you guys tell me if you agree or not. This what's I think so cool about this next generation of Polynesian kids, because I really think they're getting a lot of the best of our culture, sure. but without the shackles, they can't have a voice. They can't speak up right. and share their own opinions. Because I think I could speak pretty much for our families. There was a lot of like head down, not yep. a lot of eye contact, a lot of when you said you're going to, when parents said they're going to discipline you, they disciplined you. Yeah. They didn't forget to hit you. They yeah. hit you on the spot. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of like, I can't say anything out of pocket. I can't take chances. I can't take risks.
I don't have a voice.
Yeah. So you got to be super proud as a mom. Be like, man, she gets to do, because I'm sitting here listening to you, what you just said. I'm like, I'm 51. I just learned that. Like, yeah. I'm jealous. Like, yeah. I didn't have that. Like, what if I say people don't like me?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I was so scared of that. So, Ray, quick question for you. You know, she did the video. Was that hard for you? Because when I met you at lunch, it really, even though we're not the same person, we come from the same type of guys. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm like, I'm putting myself in your shoes. I'm like, oh, dude. I'm like, baby, don't do that. I hope it works. Like, you know, like, right. But I'm like, kind of that vibe. So what was going through your mind when she's like, I'm going to ask the world to help my dad. Yeah. And you're like, are you worthy of that help? Like, what was going through your mind?
Well, that's funny because when we met with the kidney team back in August, and they did mention to put my story out on social media. And then so we're like, okay, so I'm thinking about it. And then my wife, she's just like, oh, so have you had any thoughts or ideas yet? Like, how do you want to tell that story? Have you done anything about it? You know, she would check in on me and stuff. But at the same time, like, I'm a person who's, like, real private, you know. And like you said, where we don't want to ask for help, or we just don't want people to
see you differently.
Yeah.
You don't want to be a service project.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or like a charity case.
Sympathy.
But at the same time, I'm like, when she did send that out, first of all, like the way she put it out, like the way she made it, it was me, you know.
It was your personality, goofing, acting all silly, doing all your stupid dances you always do.
Not to like interject, but like so many people are like, you know what? Like we know you guys, but we haven't seen that side of him. So it was neat to see like this is her perspective. And who Ray is through his kids' eyes. And it gave us a more personal, like, take on him. And I'm like, which was executed perfectly, which was what we wanted.
Yeah. Because looking at that, I was like, man, that's how it really was. And then seeing my current situation, and I'm like, man, how do I bounce back from this, you know? Especially, like, I need a kidney now. And if I don't get a kidney, like, what's my life expectancy going to be like? What's my quality of life going to be like? Because, like,
it's downhill from there.
Yeah.
It's just downhill.
And so, when she sent it out and started getting like all these, like this attention, and I'm like, man, like people really do care about it.
And
I knew they always did, but like, I'm not the type to be like, you know, go out and ask for help or like, I was just me, you know, it's just who I was. But like, that was the most humbling part of this whole like process. It was just being vulnerable and just like accepting help. And I know people love me, but like this outpouring of like love, I mean, like it was just.
You don't really know what people really think about you though. Yeah. And then I was watching some of those comments and stuff. If I were you, I'd be like, dang, like, I didn't know I made that impression on these people. Exactly. Was that going through your mind? Like,
yeah.
Well, because I've always told him that, too. I'm like, you have a way with people. Like, number one, he's a really good listener.
Dude, everyone wants to be his best friend. Yeah. Every time I've seen it, everything's your best friend.
Yeah, like, he just has that way with people. Like, he's so good with it. So I'm like, you don't even understand, like, the effect you have. Mm-hmm. And how, like, you influence people's life, even as, like, a more of a quiet person. Like, your personality and just, you're such a good listener and you're happy and you're upbeat. And I said, and actually I asked him, cause Taylor's like, mom, does he like the video? And I'm like, do you like the video? And he's like, this was his response. Yeah, I like it. I'm like, that's it. Yeah, I like it. She spent all this time. I've been hounding her.
She's been crying for days trying to put it together.
And then he was just like,
I was just trying to like,
I know, trying to keep,
process it all.
Take it in.
Yeah.
And just
like, but then he's like, no, I mean, and he didn't really say much, but I think it was like, literally as soon as that thing dropped, like it was like call after call for days. And he was like, man, people really do care. I'm like, yeah, people love you. And I think we forget that. You forget that when you're in all of the mess of like disease and life. I mean,
it was like people from everywhere, like back home and people I work with back in California. Like
football guys, football, all mixed different types of
guys,
people.
Absolutely football guys.
High school friends.
Back in Virginia. Mission companions, like everywhere.
No love lost after all these years. You haven't seen some of those people in years and their last impression is this is the guy we need to reach out. And that's proof to I didn't even hear it till recently, but like, I think it's an old saying that says, the best place to store your wealth is in your reputation.
Mm-hmm. For real. Mm-hmm.
Because when the brownies hit the fan and life is tough, people will remember if you did them wrong or if you did them right. Yeah. If you did them right, it's so cool thing about our brains, we've evolved to be social. So if you see someone else in pain, it actually causes you pain. Mm. If that weren't the case, our society would not exist.
Right. Yeah.
We wouldn't care enough to come. Because we can't live, like, if you're hurting like this, you can't, if this was ancient Polynesia, you can't go get fish, food, and water for yourself. If you're hurting, you need family, you need a tribe. And so, you know, as I'm sitting here talking to you guys and listening to this, I just know that this is a great example of relationship health.
Yeah.
Relationships are going to make us healthy or not healthy, or they're going to improve our health or decrease our health.
Yeah.
And in this situation, it improved it. So Taylor, if you wouldn't mind sharing, because we've been holding out kind of like a Quentin Tarantino movie. Like we started saying something in the front and then we kind of pulled back. You don't know what's really going on to the end. So why don't you tell us about the relationship part of the story and really just the overall big blessing that came from a relationship.
Oh, like how dad got his kidney transplant. Yeah, so I started my mission in Nauvoo. I think it all really goes back to that, but...
Tell people where Nauvoo's at for those who don't know.
Yeah, I didn't know where it was.
Yeah, if someone's not Mormon, they'll have no idea where Nauvoo's at.
Nauvoo is in Illinois, northwest Illinois, I think. It's a historic site for our church. Yeah. I called it Navajo. I thought I was going to
hit Navajo.
When she opened her call.
When I opened my mission.
There's no Navajo Indians out here. What's going on?
Yeah, I thought I was going to Indian Reservation, but found out it wasn't that. And so... I was one of 60 sister missionaries. So Nauvoo is just a sister mission.
Okay.
So there's no elders there. And then...
So you're just talking to people, but you're not like actually just introducing people to the church.
Yeah. Okay. So they come to Nauvoo. It's a city. I used to call it like the Wakanda of the church only because nobody comes in and no one really goes out. Like come in because you know of it. And if you don't know about it,
you would never
come.
It's only a destination for people who know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like passing people who are like, for on everyone road else, trips.
It's just they needed gas, right?
Yeah, truly. And so we also served with like 60 senior couples. So. Yeah. I had like 60 sets of grandparents there. That's and cool. So it was so much fun. I didn't think I would want to dress up as a pioneer every single day.
Hang out a bunch of old palangis on.
Yeah. But I loved it. I loved learning the history of our church and, you know, even like, you know, all the controversial stuff. I loved learning and being able to share something. And so
every family's got its own history that we know. Hey, it's just part of the history.
And so I served there for a year and then I left for the last 6 months to serve in Seattle. And so I served my mission. I served in from October of 2020 to March of 2022. Anyway, I came home.
Living life.
And then I came home and that's kind of where dad's health started declining kind of around the time I came home ever since then. And so people always ask me how I was doing. I never said how I was actually doing. Yeah. I think I fall in that category where I don't like to ask for help if I don't need it. And so anyway.
Or you don't think. I don't think I need it.
Yeah, in these situations where I counsel people, usually the kids are either posting all the time everything or they're just really like keep it close to the chest.
Yeah. True. There's no in between, really. Yeah. Anyway, so then I posted that on Instagram. I posted it on my mission. So we have a Facebook group chat.
Yeah.
And then I have a text thread with like all the girls I served with.
Yeah.
Anyway, I posted it on both of those threads. I didn't think anything of it. Some of the senior missionaries like donated to dad's like transplant foot, you know, stuff like that. Anyway, and so I posted it on January 9th. And then I get a text on March 10th, almost like exactly 2 months from the day I posted the video. And they're called like the Burns family. Yeah. I started with them. Doug and Joe Burns. And so
they look at the sweetest couple, because I watched the news station. I'm like, how sweet are those people?
Yeah, super sweet. And so they live in St. George. And she messaged me and she said along the lines of like, hey, Taylor, we're thinking of your dad. We've been praying for him. Like, our good friend had a heart attack and he's most likely going to pass. He's a organ donor. Mm-hmm. And we want to see if he could be a match for your dad's kidney. So I got that text around like 2:30 on a Monday. So like
months after you posted.
Yeah. And then I texted it to my mom and dad and I was like,
what do we
I
do?
Have this, I have this. So she asked for like my dad's name, his birthday and his transplant center. And so I gave that to her. So I went to bed, like I went to class, came home. I went home and I took a nap and my phone had died. I don't know if my parents know this, but my phone had died. And so I plugged my phone in and my phone, I woke up from my nap and I turned my phone on. And as I turned my phone on, her call is coming through, like Sister Burns' call is coming through. And I answer and she's like, hey, you know, to me that was a miracle because my phone was dead. So at the right time, she called and then she's like, we can't find your dad on the transplant list.
He's not listed as an active needing a transplant.
Yeah. So we eventually found out that was because he was on the live donor and not the deceased donor list.
Oh, there's two different lists.
Yes. Yeah. And
thanks for letting you know, right? Yeah.
Well, we had opted for that. We wanted a living donor.
I thought it was an accident. I'm like, that's messed up.
So we wanted the living donor because the living donor is
higher percentage.
The longevity of the kidneys is last longer. So we were like, no, we just want to be on the living, not deceased donor.
But technically, so continue the story, he's technically still alive.
So then she was like, we need your transplant coordinator to contact us ASAP to figure this out. Anyway, we have dinner. My mom went over to go visit someone in our ward, drop flowers off. So she left. So we had just finished dinner with dad. And then...
Well, they called.
Oh, maybe before this.
No, you said, hey, they want you to call our transplant center so that... They want our transplant center to call the donor center in St. George. And I'll be 100% honest. I haven't shared this with either one of them. I was like, let's be real. Nothing's going to come of this.
I was just saying, this looks like a Hail Mary. Yeah, this is not looking like anything.
I'm like, how am I going to call, you know, our transplant coordinator? So I leave a message. I'm like, hey, you know, this is the situation. I don't know if you'll get this between now and then. But I'm kind of like, Taylor's asking me. I say I'll do it. I do it.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, I woke up from my nap and I went downstairs and I was like, hey, we need to contact like the transplant. Or, what is her name?
Our transplant coordinator.
Our transplant coordinator. And mom's like, okay. And I feel like a child knows when their parents in a way being like,
ignoring.
Okay. A little dismissive. And I'm like, sure. But like, there was something in me that.
You're like, no.
I was like, I asked 4 or 5 times. Yeah, I was like, I think like we need to call. And then I came back downstairs and I was like, did you call yet? And she was like, I'm making dinner. Like, I was like, okay, I'm sorry, you know, but
she's used to bossing you around. I know, right?
But I just had like
a feeling.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Anyway. And so then we had dinner.
I was gone. Ray has he's kind of an escape artist, right? Hmm. So then he just like doesn't tell, he gets a call, but he doesn't have to tell the girls. He just walks upstairs.
Well, the thing is my dad's phone sucks. Like it, honestly, if you call him, you can barely hear him. So his phone was just on. Like when he was walking upstairs, we were like, okay, good night, Dad. But then I could tell he was listening to a voicemail.
Yeah.
But I didn't think anything of it. So then all of a sudden,
he's calling me because I'm over at the neighbor's house and he's blowing my phone. And I'm like, yo, like.
Got her like 10 times. Yeah. She's not picking up.
Yeah. So finally, I'm like, yes, honey, what do you need? He's like, the IMED. I said,
get over, get home.
No. He said, IMED called. Can you come home? And I'm like,
now you're like, wait, what?
I'm at like kidney. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'll be right home. So I came home.
She came home and then she's like, where's dad? And I'm like, upstairs. Like, we're just cleaning up dinner with my sisters. And she like runs upstairs. Probably the fastest I've ever seen her run upstairs.
Yeah, what's going on? I'm like, nothing, nothing
like,
at all.
I'm like, what's wrong? And she's like, nothing. I'm like, okay, whatever.
I said it like that.
Yeah, you're like nothing, but
but the beautiful.
But we were also
honey, nothing.
She's like nothing. Just you're fine. And I was like, okay. So me and my sisters were just messing around downstairs, cleaning up dinner, and then eventually, I don't know what happened between then, but all I know is that they came down like an hour later, and they came down and they were both quiet and they had tears in their eyes, and I was like.
So you guys would tell us what's
so
going
either,
on.
So yeah. Like, I know that look. So I was like.
It's either really good or really bad.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. I think the first thing I said was, who died? And my mom's like, no one died. And I was like.
Actually, somebody did.
Well, okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Eventually. But like in that moment, then I said, what's wrong with grandpa? Only because our grandpa's getting old. So I was like, what's wrong with grandpa? Nothing's wrong with grandpa. I'm like, what's going on? They're like, your brother's coming home. We'll tell you when he gets home. I'm like, well, that's just great. But you can tell them what happened upstairs because I don't even know.
So my transplant coordinator, they call and they said somebody wants to donate a kidney in your behalf, and they still needed to run some tests. The blood that I had on file,
Your antibody test.
My antibody test expired in like they say.
So they couldn't use that one then.
No, they couldn't use that one. So they wanted us to come up to Murray to get to do a blood draw. And it was like almost midnight. So they're like, hurry up and go do that so that they can send in the labs, the blood, so that they can do a test.
Yeah, everything's timing now. It's like, go. Like, there's
to see if like my blood matches up with his blood and just things match up. And so we'll do that. And then they were like, call into work. You know, you need to be on call in case something happens out of this. Because if it does, then you need.
It's on, the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. Buy two select laundry appliances and get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop all things Maytag, including the new stackable Pet Pro laundry system that removes pet hair from clothes. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.
Ever feel like your blanket just can't keep up with you or the weather? Introducing the all-season Miki Couture Everywhere Blanket. Whether you're at the beach, on a hike, or cozying up around the fire pit, the Miki Couture Everywhere Blanket is your perfect companion. This new hooded blanket is super soft, ultra-portable, and stylish, too. It offers luxury comfort and warmth that goes wherever you go. Get your new Miki Couture Everywhere Blanket today. Available now in stores and online at MikiCouture.com.
To come in right away, because when the kidney passes, when the donor passes away, they'll put the kidney under saline, to keep it alive.
Yeah,
and so, but they'll light it up to.
But there's a time limit, right?
Yeah, like the donor, if the donor dies, he has 2 hours. Like once they pull the plug. He's got 2 hours to die.
Yeah.
And if he dies on his own within 2 hours, they use the organs. If he doesn't die on his own, he can't use the organs. Okay. So
that's why you're on the live list.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so.
So weren't you a preliminary match before all that? Did you know if you were?
Yeah. Well, my blood matched up with his blood. Yeah. They still wanted to do some tests.
Just, check every box. Right. Yeah.
So we do the blood test. And then the next day they're like, we'll call you. And so the morning goes. And it goes through the afternoon.
Well, they call in the morning. They're like, hey, the patient expired. They're going to do a biopsy. And we're like, okay. And they're like, we'll call you. And I'm like, okay, this guy hasn't eaten since 9:30 last night.
I know he's hungry.
He's getting like hangry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's like, I'm hungry. But I'm like, you can just drink apple juice. That's all they said. So here you go. Get yourself a lot of apple juice.
So by noon I call. This is like in the morning when they called us. Yeah. So by noon I call. And ask them how everything's going, what they feel, if it's going to be. Because while we were waiting, and then, you know, you start to have, like, little doubts settled in. Like,
well, you're trying to protect yourself from bad news or something not working. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're trying to stay positive and be like, this is going to work out. I'll be optimistic. But then the longer the wait was, we were like, man, maybe it's just not meant to be. And maybe it's not going to work out. And then we're back to like square one, and but so like around 5 o'clock comes, and then they call, and I'm expecting to hear, like, it didn't work out. And so she says, the surgeons like what they see. You need to get to the hospital.
ASAP Rocky, just like that.
Yeah, didn't tell us what to bring or anything. Just need to go check into the 10th floor. They're waiting for you. And at this point, I'm thinking that I still need to do more tests.
Yeah. And you didn't know you're going under the knife when you got there.
They didn't say anything about getting the transplant.
Probably even better. You probably would be a little more scared.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we get to the, so we're like, we got to go. We get to the hospital. We tell the family we're heading to the hospital. We check in, put the gown on, and they started like doing tests. Like they put this PICC line in my neck because I had to do plasmapheresis to get all the plasma out. And so that
new plasma in.
And so while they're telling us that we're going to do all this, so Lauren finally speaks up and says, so if he's getting all this stuff, he's like, is he going to have a transplant? And so the nurse is like, yeah, he's going to have one tomorrow morning at 7. And we're like, this is the first time we actually hear anybody say that we're going to get a transplant. So now
the hope is like, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
We're getting it?
So now it's like, we heard it. And now we're like, it's going to happen. So we look at each other. We just start bawling. And we're
just
like,
huddle up, team. Yeah. Start crying.
Yeah, we're just like, oh, it's going to happen. It's really going to happen. So the next morning, 7 o'clock. And from that point where they told us and everything else, getting ready for it, it was like going so smooth. Like even the nurses were like, we've never seen it like
go so smoothly. Yeah. But one piece of information that I think is important is like the night before when we talked to our transplant coordinator, who actually ended up calling us back after we talked to IMED, she's like, hey, so I said, they said we weren't on the donor list. And I said, so I'm confused because, like, that's wrong. And we are. And she's like, well, you're both right. So she said, you're on the active donor list. You didn't show up. The reason why they couldn't find Ray is because he wasn't on the deceased donor list. Technically speaking, even though the man is alive, he will be deceased.
So they don't even put him on the active.
So they don't even, right. So they're like, we weren't checking the active donor list because, you know, we're only
this is great information for anyone listening to this that could be in this situation. Yeah. I've never even known that.
Yeah. So the transplant coordinator is like, they said, hey, if we're preliminary match, we want to be a direct donor to Ray. Mm-hmm. We want to be a direct donor. Now the family said this, we want to be a direct donor. Our transplant coordinator within a half an hour got us switched to the deceased donor list and approved by our insurance for him to have a kidney transplant the next day. Because the kidney transplant has to happen within 24 hours.
And in hospitals and medicines, it's not that smooth of a transition in anything usually.
Yeah.
Especially in a big procedure like this, because there's so many boxes to check.
Yeah. Right.
So it had to be a direct. They had to say, he's getting it. This is not going on a list. It's going directly to him.
We wanted to go directly to him.
Yeah.
Because someone else could have cut in. Like, the next person in line, you could have been, way down the line.
Right.
I think, too, though, like, each time, like, something happened, like, my parents called us or we met as a family. And so, like, I think one of my favorite memories was that night after you guys came down, my parents, like, set all of us down. And I was like, what the heck is happening? Because, honestly, there was someone else in our family who could have been a donor for my dad.
Who actually was considered a match. We were waiting to hear back. This is a family member in San Diego.
Yeah.
It's actually my sister-in-law. She was a match. And so she was going through this process and she was waiting on this one test. So we were like, sweet, we got a living donor right in our family.
Yeah.
This is money here. And so, but I hadn't heard from her. And of course I'm going to give her space to let her work through the process. Yeah. So when this came up, I'm like, wait, do we take this? Cause like, my sister-in-law's a match, but like now we realize like it was meant to be that Rob Dunlap was our donor and not my sister-in-law. Yeah.
So my parents, that even though it was a match, you guys learned that doesn't mean that it's going to work just because it's a match. There's other things that have to be qualified too.
Yeah.
So that night was like pretty emotional for like all of us. I think we all got up and like we always do family hugs, but I don't know if like my parents know this, but like after they found out the next day that my dad was getting a kidney transplant, like me and my siblings, like we were together when we got the call and we like just knelt down and said a prayer. And I think for me, that's been such a big testament to all of this because we've had to be so prayerful from the get-go and like everybody's prayers. It wasn't just our prayers, but like in that moment, it was like everyone's prayers had like manifested this miracle for our family.
You know, guys, I was in school one time, and I remember my professor, he said something. I don't know if it was like backed by science or proof, but I liked what he said. He goes, "You will learn way more from being a parent raising your kids than you ever learn from being raised by your parents." And the reason why is because you get to run it back. You're watching yourself, but it's not you, but it's you. But it's a new, like, 2.0 version of you.
Right.
They didn't come with all the crap that you came with on your hard drive. Like, right. They're new, and they can be become a person that extends further than you ever could.
For sure. Yeah.
So for the two of you, hearing what your daughter just said, everything that she did, for you guys, you couldn't do for yourself. What does that make you think as parents to know that your children, by definition, they don't have the same barriers that you guys grew up with? They don't have those same, like, oh, I don't deserve this, I can't ask for help, whatever. I don't know. It sounds like she and your kids have been an example to you guys lately.
For sure.
What do you think, Ray?
Because I married a good woman.
That's right. I would tell people, like, man, how'd you get your wife? I'm like, I'm trying to get co-signed into heaven someday, man. I'll be the first one, like, I married her, though. She got me.
She got to get me in.
Yeah, get me in. Slide me in the back door.
Right.
You know, I think, like you said, like, the barriers, like, growing up with the parents that we had and, like, how they were brought.
Just old school is harder. There's not a time for, hey, how you feeling, Ray?
You couldn't express any kind of feeling, at all. Like,
life was hard, man.
It was. And then, like, you couldn't even, like, go to your parents and ask them for advice.
No.
Because they would be like, well, figure it out. Like, I went through it and I figured it out. And all you want,
I'll give you advice. Why are you stupid?
Why are you asking me?
Yeah.
And then you get hit for, like, asking a question. And so, like, I think we both agreed, like, when we were early in our marriage, that we wanted to raise them different, especially on my side. Cause,
gentle persuasion.
Yeah.
Not the heavy hand.
No.
Because there'll be times where I'd come back home from school and I tried out for, like, for baseball. Like, they wanted to put me in the draft out of high school. And I went through the trials. It was with the Dodgers and the Marlins. But the Dodgers ended up telling me that they wanted to draft me. But so I go home and I tell my mom, she's like, how's practice? I was like, that's good. I was like, so they wanted, like, a professional scout came and wanted to, like, draft me out of high school. She's like, and what did you say? I was like, I'm going to go on my mission. She's like, good. Nothing like, oh, that's awesome. You know what I mean?
And yeah.
So, but that's just, like, how I was brought up. It was just, like, so, like, I don't know, not.
There's not a lot of conversation. Yeah. There's not a lot of dialogue. There's not like,
details. There's not like, I'm worried about this for you. That's why I'm angry. So, I'm not angry. I'm actually worried.
Yeah. So you bother not even to say anything and just do what makes them happy.
Yeah.
And so you really are inspired by your kids because they're doing stuff that's like, you're like, dang, like, I'm jealous that this, like, that they have the ability to do that, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's, when we made that decision that we want them to, like, ask us questions and come to us.
Because it's you guys against the world, right? Yeah. The world's influence versus the family's influence. Yeah. And, you know, the world's got good things, but sometimes there's not good things. You don't want to influence your kids, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're mean at them, if you're yelling all the time, then they're going to go to the world for information. Yeah. Why would they come? I see this with parents all the time. Like, if you freak out because your kid left a wet towel on the floor, what do you think they're going to tell you, that they vaped?
Yeah.
They're not going to tell you they did dirty stuff, like they went a little too far with their girlfriend or boyfriend. You know, yeah, they're not going to give you that information because they don't feel that you can handle the truth.
Yeah.
And I think the older generations had a harder time handling the truth. They could always be, oh, you could tell me anything. Proof says otherwise. Yeah. History says otherwise. And so the same question for you, it's like, what did your parents do that allowed you and your sisters to just be this way? Because they had to allow you guys that freedom. Because if they were the old school, don't get me wrong, the old school parents, they were great for that time, but we're in a different generation now.
Yeah.
I think, like, for me and my siblings, like, my parents have always been the type where we talk things out. Like, if I express that I'm frustrated with my brother, my mom would call my brother and be like, we're talking about this now. And if I don't want to talk about it, my mom's like, I don't care. We're talking about it. But honestly, like growing up, if there was ever a bickerment or if anyone was ever like feeling some type of way, we always sat down on the couch and we talked about it. Like, I remember even a vivid memory, like one night someone got frustrated with my brother. It's probably mom.
Yeah, it was me. It's always me.
It's okay. Yeah. But she got frustrated, with my
mom. I know
my
who brother. Your mom's dad is. I've been in the house.
She got frustrated with my brother. And I was just sitting on the couch reading my scriptures. But I was like, you know where you just don't want to make an exit because you don't want to get involved. Anyway, I made an exit.
You're trying to pull your arm out, slide out the back door.
So I literally attempted an exit and it backfired. And my mom was like, no, you sit there.
No, you're in this now too.
She was like, you sit there and you listen and you be there for him. And I'm like, why do you want someone to be there for him if he's getting yelled at by you? But I've realized, like, I'm really grateful that in moments that I've gotten to just, like, sit there.
Just be the emotional and support
watch,
human.
And watch it happen.
Yeah.
Because I think I didn't realize people weren't raised like that. Even, like, I have friends who are like, that's not normal, Taylor. And I'm like, oh.
And it's not just unique to Polynesian families. Like, there's a lot of families that don't really care about what you're thinking.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And, like, my parents, like, I remember I was going into high school and they sat me down. They're like, you want to do drugs? You want to drink alcohol? Any of it. You do it. You tell us. We'll do it here at home. Like, that was always what they said.
I love that reverse psychology.
Yeah.
My dad said that, but I'm like, let's be real. No one's going to do that.
Yeah, let's be real. I am bringing it home, but I'm not getting hit. But it was just, it was more of like an example. Like, we're just saying that, like, whatever you do, we're going to support you, but don't do stuff that's going to make it bad for everybody, you know?
Yeah, and I think another thing, because, like, how my dad just shared that story, like, he always said that growing up, they didn't ever really celebrate the small things. And so in our home, we always celebrated the small things.
High five the small things, right?
Yeah. Like, what's and up? Like, whether that was like me getting an A on my test or like me trying out for basketball and like getting on varsity or like getting asked to like just do anything, my family was always like, we're going to celebrate those things. And so I'm really grateful that my parents did that. I feel like I've seen the difference it's made in my family after seeing like how their families were operated and run.
Well, I mean, the goal is, I've never heard a sane parent not say this. All sane parents say this. I want my kids to not be like me. I want them to be better than me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No parent wants their kids to be just like them. They'd be insane. Like, why would you wish that on them?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because, like, why did you go through all that stuff just to give them the same problems for them to deal with? Yeah. The goal is, like, let's shortcut it. But the challenge is, and I just want to congratulate both your parents because the challenge, so we were raised, I just like to be dramatic, we were raised by cavemen and women, okay? Then we're supposed to raise like really like sensitive, loving children. So there's this bridge between generations. I'm not joking. This is the generation break. For generation after generation, it was the same thing. No shame, no fefe. Like you just no eye contact. I'm talking about Polynesian community. Like there's just this thing that you just do. There's the social norms. But now that's changing.
Yeah.
Now the social norms like, hey, how about instead of just hitting each other, being mad and holding grudge the rest of life, talk it out. You only get better at what you practice.
Yeah.
So if you get better, if you practice like dismissing your kids or like shutting down, just stop fighting, stop arguing because I've had a bad day and I can't handle it, then you get better at dismissing things.
Yeah.
But when you're forced to sit down and talk it out, after a while, you don't have to be forced to do it. Yeah. You just know it's the way. It's the best way to do it. Deal with it now instead of dealing with it 2 weeks from now and let the grudges hold. Because when you have friends, you see friends will fight and argue over the pettiest, stupid things that they just didn't talk out.
Yeah.
And with digital communication, I think your guys' story is a great way where you can use social media to be socially healthy.
Right.
Yeah. Everything I talk about with people is social health, which really is just relationship health.
Yeah.
You use the relationship that you develop. You had no idea when you were there. What if you're a missionary there and that family, that couple didn't have a good impression of you?
Yeah.
What if you're just let's just imagine a character. What if you're one of those girls walked in, hey, what's up? I always goof around, joke around, never serious about the work. Just kind of being playful and stupid not stupid, but joking too much.
Then
people don't take you serious, right? So those relationships you developed led to a text phone. Then they, because the person, that woman on the news article, there's no way if she would have got a phone call, say, hey, would you like to donate your husband's kidney? This woman's grieving. She's going through the hardest thing in life.
Yeah.
Donate to a girl that we don't like?
Yeah, exactly.
That phone call does not happen. No. They're saying, will you donate to a girl who's like our granddaughter?
Exactly.
Yeah. That phone call happens.
Yep. Yeah.
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 So I really want you guys to just do, because the cool thing about this has a shelf life forever. Like, this is not like a current event type of thing.
Yeah.
For any daughter out there or any child out there that their parents, because I work with a lot of people, their parents are going through drug addiction, physical issues, no matter what it is, that thinks that I don't have the ability to help. I'm just the daughter. I'm too small. I'm too small of a person, meaning like influential wise, no one's going to listen to me. What would you like to say to kids out there that want to do something for their parents, but they are scared and they don't know where to start? And I know it's a general question, but, you know.
Yeah, I think something that I feel like I've been taught my whole life, not only by my parents, but I think like my village, like in California, my mom said we lived within like a 5-mile radius of all of our aunts and uncles. And so I think something that they've always instilled in us, and I even think
from Fire Mountain Road to Poinsettia.
Exactly.
Right? And so I think they've always taught us to rely on our gifts that we've been given. And
that your gift is just, it's yours to give to other people.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And I think if anyone was in my position, I would tell them to look at what they already can offer, because I don't think anyone's expecting you.
So you don't have to change yourself. No. You have things about yourself that can help. Okay. I like that.
I think, cause for me, it's like as a missionary, you know, those missionaries who are robots who no one wants to be around.
Those students, missionaries, there's lots of people like at work just, who are robots too. Yeah.
But I think it's because people take their personalities out of who, like something.
They don't trust that their personality could magnify whatever they're doing.
And I think we're giving gifts to be able to like excel and bring goodness to others. And so for me, it wasn't really like me doing something extremely out of the ordinary. Like my family knows I like to post on social media.
And you're a media mission. So you knew that it actually helps.
Yeah, and I think from my mission, they taught us how, like, a story can have a lasting impact if you do it the right way and you, like, have the right narrative. And so for me, it was just using all these experiences I had had. Like, I don't know why in the beginning of college, I thought it was going to be a good idea to be a photographer. Like, my mom never questioned me in that moment. But
what are you going to do for work, though?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because you don't get paid doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously. But, like, the things I learned in those college introductory, like, classes for editing helped me on my mission. And then editing programs I learned on my mission and the people I met on my mission that trained me on media helped me into what I did for my dad. And so
cultivated all that together. And then, you couldn't just make that up one day.
Yeah. And so I feel like it's just, one, being humble to, like, learn something new
that you're not good at
but that you can make it for your own good. But I honestly think it's just coming down to, like, what do you already have to offer and what can you channel to help your family?
If you're a bomb chef, freaking cook them a bunch of meals, take them, like, do what you already have. I love it. That's such great advice, because you're right, kids start to think like, I don't have $1 million, so I can't help my dad. If the family had, if anyone had $1 million, we wouldn't have this problem, right? So there's just, what do you have? I love that. I love that. Mom, how about you? Same thing, a mother, husband struggling, physical, because this is actually so much more common. I think you guys realize after you post it how many other people have gone through stuff. A lot of people, like, this is not, and they have more sympathy and empathy and compassion, because they don't want to wish that on any other family.
Right.
So would you say to any mom out there trying to help out a stubborn husband, won't ask for help, you know, that kind of thing?
Well, I think first of all, like, you have to have, like, what's worked. And what I've learned over this process is we can't have an expectation of what we think someone should be doing, right? Like, so
can't assign an outcome. Oh, they have to do this. You can't assign an outcome.
And I think, like, honestly, being in this position with Ray, and from, like, almost going blind, like, right after we moved here with that issue, and then just snowballing into, like, the kidney issue. I think what you have to do is you have to give the person, like your spouse, or whoever you're caring for, like, you have to be empathetic. And I feel like this situation or this experience we've been able to get through it through empathy. And not only because people have shown us empathy, but it's given us perspective now. And I've actually talked to my kids about this. I'm like, listen, people can act a certain way and we may not like it, right?
Yeah.
I'm no psychologist, but at the same time, I'm like, you have to step back and think, okay, I don't know what that person went through before they got here. I don't know what they're going through. They may be acting out. They may be having, and I actually had this conversation with Ray many times. I'm like, yo, you're like silent. You don't talk. You don't say anything. Like, what's going on in your head? And he's like, I'm good. But when I was able to break him down, it's like, you know, I feel like a failure as a dad. I feel like a failure as a husband. I can't provide. You've been working. You do everything and I do nothing.
It's a dagger in his heart, man.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm good for nothing. Like, I have nothing to offer you guys.
So maybe it's best I don't get a kidney. Like, deep, weird thoughts kind of creep in, man.
No, it is.
Weird thoughts start getting in that head.
Yeah. But I realize, I'm like, you know what? The best thing that I can do, and maybe this is a very, like, elementary thought process, but I'm like, we just have to keep going. And we just have to, and honestly, it sounds really crazy, but when all this started with him, our bishop came to me and he's like, hey, I need you to be Relief Side president. And he's our best friend. And I'm like, yo, bro, what? Like, you know what we're going through. And he's like, I know. I keep telling God that. And this is what he keeps telling me. And I told Ray, it's not even a calling anybody asked me. Like, I'm like, put me in the nursery. I'm cool there, right?
I know. I was like, nobody wants that.
Nobody wants it. But I'm like, through it all, it's made me see that, like, through our struggles and through his struggles and trials, like, everybody's going through hard.
It's crazy how when you're serving, it takes a little bit. It makes other things more manageable.
It really does. Yeah. And then it's like, so if anything I can say is, like, just be empathetic and then just be, like, be patient with yourself as, like, a caregiver and give yourself grace. That's what it boils down to. Give others grace and give yourself grace because you're not going to be able to make it through. And then lastly, and the hardest lesson that we've had to learn, because I don't care if you're Polynesian, whatever ethnicity you are, nobody likes to accept help. It is like so humbling.
It's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. And like,
even though you're thankful for it, it's hard to swallow it.
Like being vulnerable enough to be like, okay, he's like, I just don't want to put all my business out there, like with the kidney, because you kind of seem like a charity case. But I'm like, we have to learn, like, so it's okay for us to give and shell out, give it like all this service. But like, oh, no. I don't deserve that.
Call
I don't
that
need
hypocrisy.
That.
That's right. That's being a hypocrite. It really is. Yeah.
But I think because we've had to be on the receiving end and it's been so humbling, it's also been such a blessing because you realize like, okay, well, people do really care about us and we care about them. And like, this is God's way of being like, hey, you're asking me for help and you're asking me for my will and you're asking me for blessings, right? You're asking me to take care of you. But yeah, when someone comes to you, you're like, no. So I'm like, we've had to realize like, no, this is his way.
It goes both ways. You got to give and receive.
Answering our prayers. And so I think it's just literally like, and just taking things one day at a time. Like you can't really set an expectation on yourself. Like today I am just going to take care of my spouse and get pizza because I can't make dinner.
It's funny. Those stupid platitudes sayings you hear your whole life. Yeah. You're like, it's actually relevant right now. You just got to like take one day at a time because you start thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you get a little, that's tomorrow is way too far ahead when you got a situation like every day is like tick tock.
Yeah.
You got to deal with right now at that particular moment.
Mm-hmm. And another thing too is I'm like, I got to make sure he's right. Like he's right in his mind. Like I can't let him spiral. I can't let him spiral and I can't let him get to a place where like he doesn't feel worthy of us or he doesn't feel worthy to be on the earth.
Because then he'll start to isolate himself.
And he did.
Yeah, he did.
He did. Yeah. And it was terrible. And I was like, And I honestly had
isolation is death row.
Yeah,
that's what death row. You start isolating yourself as a suicide prevention specialist. That is the first sign people start pulling away from family and friends. Yeah. Like it's because they think they don't matter.
Right, and he actually finally came to terms. Like, bless her heart, it was on our daughter's birthday, Lavinia, and we had it out. And finally, he just like blew up, and he's just like, "This is how I've been feeling." And some people may not agree that you should share with your kids. Like, I felt like taking my life, or I felt like I didn't deserve to be on this earth. I didn't deserve to be your dad. But you know what it taught them in the moment? It taught our girls that like, dad feels like this. Well, I've been feeling like this too. I've been mad, and it's okay for me to express how I feel. And it's the validation of like, you know what? You're entitled to feel that way. I'm sorry. We love you. And then it's like, it's making a safe space for them to express their feelings.
Well, because if the leader of the tribe, leader of the family, expresses that they don't know what to do, they can't handle it, they want to tap out, then everybody else is like, okay, we're not crazy because we're feeling similar things exactly. too. Yeah. But if you don't know that the person that you look to for strength, too often, obviously the reason why, you know, you and a lot of people do that is like, if I show weakness, then my leadership, they're not going to follow me. They're not going to think that I can keep this together. So I got to fake it till I make it.
Exactly.
Well, this isn't really, having eating a kidney is not fake.
Right.
So you can't fake it till you make it in a situation that's life or death.
Yeah.
And man, great, great, helpful suggestions.
Yeah.
I really like those a lot. Those three, we're going to make some good reels out of those ones. So Ray, you got other guys, other men, women, kids out there going through what you're going through. If there's anything you could tell them that you do not want them to make the mistakes you did, or maybe not mistakes, but like to share with people, what are some things that could help them navigate this?
I think the number one part would be allow people to help you. Like Lauren was
saying. Kill the ego, huh? Just let it go.
Just allow people to help you, because you've done things that have touched people that would want them to help you out, you know? So just allow people to like help you and be able to accept that. And it's okay to accept help from people. And just try to stay positive through it all. Like Lauren said, I got to a point where I wanted to give up.
And then you're mad at yourself for wanting to give up. Because you're like, I would never give up, but I want to give up. Who is this guy?
I was like in the basement and just like, was like, nobody would like, even like, hear it, you know what I mean? Or just like, they just come down and just fine, just like, you know, tapped out, you know? Thank Heavenly Father that like I didn't go that route. And I think going through this whole situation, like I tend to like just concentrate on myself or just think about myself, but I'm not the only one that's going through it. Like my family's going through it too. And I almost like lost sight of that. So we try to have like check-ins and check in with the kids to see how they're feeling and like where their head's at and through this whole situation. I think Lauren would do it more because when I was in the hospital. But I think that's really important too, to check in with their kids and check in with everybody in the family that's actually going through it also. Because like you said, like they see us in this because they're going through it too, and they maybe not feel like they can express what they're going on, what's going on in their mind.
They're waiting for you to go first.
Yeah. So I think that's also important too, just to check in with your team and your family. Yep.
So you lead by being strong when you need to be strong, but you also got to lead by being vulnerable and real when you need to be vulnerable and real. And that's required.
Yeah. I think you got to release those emotions. Because then once you're like, okay, like I know that I'm not crazy and I know everybody's like been feeling this weight and I'm feeling this way and he's feeling this way, then you're like, okay, now we all know how we felt. Okay, done. Let's move forward. How are we going to move forward together?
Mm-hmm. Because this is really, selfishly, this is a dream come true for me because I grew up in a family with a lot of mental health and a lot of issues a lot of abuse, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes when you're a little kid, you're watching your family like it's a TV channel, and you're like, I can't change the channel. Like, there's not, I want to change the channel.
I want to turn it off.
I want to turn it off. And then, you know, you grow up, you're like, okay, I don't want a family like that. I'm going to try to be different than that. But trying to be opposite of your family sometimes is an extreme. It's an overcorrection. Yeah. And you do things to be different than your parents instead of realizing, you know, there are a lot of good things about them.
For sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, they did the best they could, exactly. Giving them grace. Mm-hmm. And then exactly. Saying, you know what, if they knew what I knew right now, they could do what I could do. So I'm going to do it for them since they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because I always get this thing in my head, like I imagine like hundreds of years, my ancestors like up in heaven looking down when I was screwing up with drug addictions, this and that. They're like, damn, that's my fault, bro. Sorry, I gave you that issue. Like, yeah. My bad. Like, I should have corrected that, but I was too high to do it. So good luck with that, you know?
Yeah.
But like, you're literally breaking all the negative cycles and reinforcing all the positive ones. So you're fortifying a stronger family, which then your family goes outward and represents Polynesians more. So if people are running into you and the only Polynesians and Mormons they know are you, it's like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You don't got to baptize them or nothing. You don't got to like try to proselyte to them. But just by the fact that they talk with you, next thing you know, they're like, oh, tell us more about Samoans and Hawaiians. I mean, how many times have you guys had that in your life where you're the first person they really had? Next thing you know, they're like, they go around, I got a Samoan friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a Polynesian. Like, for some reason, like, I got the one guy, if someone picks with me, he'll protect me.
Right.
You know, like, they just, there's just something about the Polynesian culture. That's why this podcast, to hear you guys say what I would have wished my family could have talked about. I'll never get to hear my parents have those real conversations. I still don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the real story was. Now your answers, your kids don't have to, oh, what was grandma and grandpa? What was that like when you guys went through that? Oh, well, press play. We can watch the whole thing and play for it.
Yeah.
So just thank you guys for just doing what our ancestors couldn't do. They just weren't allowed to. But man, using technology and networking, telling stories, I can't think of another culture that was kind of made to do that more than, I think Polynesians are great examples of, at their best, of social health.
Yeah.
Putting relationships at such a high priority. That's why you guys felt weird when you moved out here and you didn't have like all the family around. I know how that is.
Yeah.
When I moved from Carlsbad, when you know everybody and you move to a place where you feel like you're a fish out of water, literally.
It's
tough, but man, the relationships you guys have now are 10 times stronger because of what you guys went through. And it makes me a better husband. When you post that stuff, I'm like, damn, I better go do the dishes, man. I can't get my act together as a husband. Because I'm like, I just put off stuff. But then because I went through heart surgeries, my kids were holding my hand. I go, going to surgery, and I don't know if I'm going to come out of this alive. Yeah. I was thinking weird things like, I didn't even like fix my son's door. Yeah. I'm like, oh, what's wrong? I put this off, and you start having these weird things because you don't want to be remembered as the guy who didn't finish the job. Man, I just want to thank you guys again. And I hope you guys had as much fun as I did.
Oh, absolutely.
To all of our listeners out here on the OG Therapy Podcast, Kava Confessions. Right now we're posting once a month, but it's pretty soon going to get to every other week and hopefully every week. And thanks for just being a great example of social health. And to all of our followers out there, remember you can follow us, you can follow us on all social media, Instagram, even on TikTok now. We got social health on TikTok. We got OG Therapy on TikTok. So follow Social Health Initiative, SHI, SHI, that's the nonprofit. And also follow the OG Therapy Podcast and follow these people here as well. You know, I'm going to try to put the Instagram video. So when we post this on YouTube, maybe we can add in a little bit like the Instagram video so people have some context of like what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll throw a couple plays in there where Ray had a couple, you know, goal line stand stops, you know, back then.
Not that many. Kinda,
put a little feather in your cap. Let him know that man was a true baller.
He was.
I was still surprised when I saw you at the Carlsbad Steak Center playing basketball. And I'm like, wait, Ray? I was like, I thought you made it to the league. Mm-hmm. Like, nah, man, they got these things with measurements. Like, you know, apparently they want to be
like 5'11", I guess.
At that time, they wanted everybody to look like homeboy from the Ravens.
Ray Lewis.
Yeah, Ray Lewis. They want to really look like Ray Lewis.
That's a real big
Not a lot of dudes look like Ray Lewis. So, but man, I'm glad to have you guys. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
And just to let you know, we're going to dedicate this episode to our cousin Eva Malifua.
Yes.
Because there's not a better family that represents social health than that family.
Yeah.
And so it's the Malifua family and all of our family out there. Thank you. Until next time, tofa, soifua, and be cool.
Thank you.
Peace.
How do you guys feel, man?
That was awesome.
Cool. At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.